T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, hi again, everyone. I'm 1010 Wins Sports Director Mark Renee. This is a podcast edition of On the Mark. We take a look at the stories behind the stories in the world of sports, and we have a rare treat today. It's a guy who joins a very short list of two-time On the Mark guests. Jeff Perlman is with us. He is the author of the new book called Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Laker Dynasty. Mr. Perlman, good morning. Thank you for joining me at such an early hour for you out in California.
I just want to say, people ask repeatedly, oh, why'd you write this book? Why'd you write this book? There's only one answer. It's to get back on the show. That is the only motivation. So I am here. I made it. I'm telling you now, the book sucks. Don't buy it. I just wanted to get back on the show. Now the dream done.
The book is great. And by the way, the list is you and Billie Jean King. So you're in rarefied air, man.
I want three. I want to do something better than Billie Jean King.
You're going to have to come out with another book then.
All right, fair enough.
All right. First of all, condolences on Norma, but congratulations on your new puppy. Poppy, I believe, is the name.
Yeah, Poppy. Thank you.
A Bernedoodle?
She is a Bernedoodle, and she seems like she's been here for 2.5 days. She seems like a very nice dog, actually.
Okay. And how big will she get?
Very small, like a bread box. Not very big.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on because we do have a lot to talk about and very little time. Jeff, in case you have forgotten or didn't know, also wrote Football for a Buck about the USFL and a certain former owner of the New Jersey Generals who has gone on to other things in his life, also wrote Showtime and frankly too many others to name in the very short time that we have. Jeff, I want to get right to the point about Three Ring Circus. I will edit this part for air, if you will. But it seems to me that Kobe, God rest his soul, comes off a bit as a... Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, he was young and arrogant and thought he was going to be great and had these aspirations of being immediately great and didn't really want to wait. And yeah, I mean, he showed up at the very beginning and said, in his first Laker meeting, and said, my name's Kobe Bryant. I'm from Lower Merion High School, and nobody here is going to punk me. And that was kind of his introduction and sort of set a tone. And he came determined. I remember his dad was an NBA player, Jelly Bean Bryant, a former NBA player. So he did have an idea of what it took to make in the league. I think he came very determined. I'm going to set this tone. They're not just going to treat me like some high school kid. I'm bigger, I'm better, I'm harder than that. And it did not rub people the right way. There's no doubt about it. It did not.
How long did it take him to really get into people's good graces after that? Because, you know, they say a first impression lasts a long time. And obviously his talent willed out eventually. But how long did it take for him to really, you know, get himself ingrained into the NBA family, so to speak?
Years and years and years. I mean, on the one hand, he was a force, so people respected his game very early on, even if you didn't like his game. Like, even if you were like, you know, oh, this guy's such a jerk, or this guy's, you know, whatever, insufferable, I don't really want to deal with this guy. And there were a lot of guys like that. His game was ridiculous, and his work ethic was ridiculous, and those are two things that just traveled. But as far as building really solid relationships and making close friendships, I mean, there are a million examples of a young player who, it's, you know, Shaq takes everyone out for dinner and he shows up a half hour later and gets a table for one with a book. Or when he gets married to Vanessa and Dana Point, he invites no one. Most of his teammates don't even know that he's getting married. You know, there were just a lot of examples of a really standoffish. And I don't think, again, I think he was doing what he felt he needed to do. Like, this is how he needed, he was programmed. But it did not go over well. Definitely did not.
But his dad wasn't, I mean, I remember the tail end of Joe Bryant's career with the 76ers before he went over to Europe. His dad wasn't like that, was he?
No, he wasn't actually. But his dad also taught him some things about the life in the NBA and sort of, again, you do have to protect what's yours. And I think one thing athletes don't realize, most athletes don't realize, but athletes maybe with famous fathers do, is how going into the NBA really is going into a lion's cage. And the minute you get there, there's someone's looking to replace you. And the minute you get there, someone's looking to show they're better than you. It's just a giant reality TV survival show. And I do think Kobe understood that early on. His basic thing was, these guys aren't your buddies. They're not your friends. They're not your schoolmates. You're not going to the prom. Like, you were there to beat them and dominate them and show that you were better than them. And I do think his dad really instilled that in him, even though his dad had a nicer disposition.
All right. Obviously, Kobe and Shaq and Phil are the protagonists in this book. I do want to ask, did your timeline, or maybe the better question is, how did your timeline to get this book out change with Kobe's tragic passing earlier this year?
It didn't. I was pretty adamant. You know, we had discussions a few weeks after Kobe died. What do? You push it back? The main discussion was, do we push it back? Move it back? Maybe people aren't ready. I just thought 9 months was a pretty long time to put a book out that was done with sincerity. It was anything but, you know, those cringy, quick, we got to get this book out because Kobe Bryant died kind of books, which do exist. And this was something I worked on for a long time. It was really well developed. It was, you know, reported as hard as I've ever reported a book. So there was never a talk about moving it up. I just think that would be disgusting. I don't think I just don't believe in taking advantage of someone's death like that. And ultimately we left it where it was and hope that it's okay.
Curious to know, how different was your approach putting this book together as opposed to when you wrote Showtime a few years back?
It was different. The NBA landscape has really changed when it comes to media. It's gotten a lot harder. The access isn't as great. The teams aren't as helpful. It's a lot more agent driven. And I did find that with my reporting too. You know, when I did the first book, the Lakers had a different public relations person. The guy was great and access was amazing. He couldn't have been more helpful, more friendly. And it felt a little more like there was a brick wall put up when I was working on this. And that definitely made it a little harder. So you just put your head down and just go even harder. But it definitely wasn't as easy. It was a much harder. It's probably the hardest book I've ever written.
Well, I loved it. I love the metaphors, by the way. Mario Bennett, cucumber, sponges, intellect. Things I never thought I would ever read before or see anywhere. Benoit Benjamin, Benoit Benjamin, a sage basketball guru, Patrick Ewing's scowl froze boiling water. I thought these were tremendous images. The 2002 final, Lakers against the Nets, you compared to eating at Burger King following a 9-course bonanza at Per Se.
I have been to Per Se one time when I got really lucky. And I will say the new Impossible Whopper is not very good, but it's okay. It's okay. So maybe in a way playing the Nets, that's not such an insult at the Nets because it's just like eating an Impossible Whopper when you're really hungry.
Now, you also reminded me that Kobe was this close to actually being drafted by the Nets. And I'm curious to know what you think about how his career might have turned out different. Obviously, the talent was there, but would we have ever seen it elevate to the level it did were he playing for the Nets, or had he started his career as a Net in the shadow of what was then a pretty good Knicks team, too?
It seems unlikely. It just seems like he would have been playing for John Calipari. He would have been surrounded by a lot of indifference. I don't know. I could easily see a situation where John Calipari drafts Kobe Bryant for the Nets. He realizes quickly this is his most talented player. inserts him in the starting lineup. Fans start flocking because there's this high school kid in the starting lineup. He's surrounded by Ed O'Bannon and Khalid Reeves. He's hawking shots left and right. He doesn't play any defense. He's kind of getting abused. He gets in these habits. And before long, we're looking at a poor man's Carmelo Anthony. Like, I just think situations matter. And he was drafted into the perfect situation, by the Lakers.
All right. Before we move on and talk about some general things about this book, what do you suppose Kobe and Shaq's relationship was like at this time last year?
I think it was improved. They were never close. And that's not an insult. Like, they just weren't close. They weren't buddy-buddy. But they definitely had repaired it and gotten past the hostilities and were checking in on each other about their kids and stuff like that. So it wasn't – and they weren't buddy-buddy. They were never going to be buddy-buddy. But I think they had a nice relationship where they could attend things together and get along. It kind of reminded me – to be honest, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers after time passed. And you realize, you know what, we did experience this thing together. We have this unique tie. It doesn't mean we have to go fishing together, hunting together, or go to movies together. We have this bond. I think that's what Shaq and Kobe had, was a bond over shared experience.
Jeff, without giving anything away, who was your favorite interview subject when you put this book together?
I'd probably be former Laker J.R. Ryder, who, well, I drove to his house unexpectedly and knocked on his door because I didn't have a phone number. And after honestly thinking he was going to hit me with a pipe, we ended up speaking for about 2 hours, and he was just a joy. So I really enjoyed J.R. Ryder of all people.
Least favorite?
Oh, I don't really, I'm not being a jerk. If anyone gave me, I mean, there are people who blew me off, like Ron Harper blew me off. Horace Grant kind of didn't return my phone calls. I have no beef with them, but those are the experiences that you find frustrating. But if anyone gave me time, even if it's 5 minutes, I'm happy to take it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I know you've been keeping track of how many outlets you have spoken to in promoting this new endeavor of yours. What's the count as of this morning?
Okay, so here's what I have to tell you. You're my favorite by far, but you are number 119, but you're my favorite.
119, right? I think is a prime number, so I'll take it.
Yes.
I'll take it. In all seriousness, why did you write this book? We know it wasn't to be on the mark.
That is just not true. The number one reason I wrote it is I'm a fan of characters, of big characters, of interesting characters. When you're writing a book, you're always searching for them. You're hoping they're there. They not only help sort of with the writing, but they help with the promotion of the book, and sort of people want to hear stories. And you know, I've written about Walter Payton and Brett Favre, singular characters, but here you really have three icons in one building. You know, you have Shaq, you have Kobe, you have Phil. That's an amazing sort of trio to write about. So when I thought about that and I thought about the time period and the success they had, it just seemed like a really good topic.
Speaking of characters, anyone ever in the history of sports more audacious than Sed Ceballos?
He nicknamed himself Chice, for short for franchise, because he thought after Magic left, he was the franchise, basically standard bearer for the Lakers. And my favorite quote was that he had a teammate named Corey Blount who said to me, his reaction was, "Yeah, buddy, you roll with that." Like, it was the most ridiculous. He was just a good NBA player. He was anything but a chice. And if you're going to be a chice, you don't nickname yourself chice. It's actually the catch-22. They should have a test at the door. If you nickname yourself chice, you are not our franchise player.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What'd you learn about Phil Jackson that you didn't know before?
I spent 8 hours with him in Montana, one of the coolest days of reporting. And I'd say two things I learned. Number one, he's an incredible, incredible Montana travel guide. Like, if you wanted to go to Montana and hire someone to take you on a day and point out all the sort of sights and sounds, Phil Jackson is your guy. And the other thing I learned is, I think what made him really great as a coach, especially during those years with the Lakers, when he just really struggled with Kobe Bryant, is he knew how to delegate within the locker room. And there are always guys like Ron Harper's and Horace Grant's and Derek Harper's and John Sally's and on and on and on, guys who, he could turn to and say, "Look, what's the pulse on this, and what's going on with this, and can you talk to this?" And the worst thing you can be as an NBA coach is a babysitter. No players want a babysitter, and he wasn't. And I just think that was really smart the way he handled things.
For the Knicks fans among us, why didn't his tenure work in charge of the Knicks?
because you got to be all in. First of all, you have to be all in, and I don't think he was. And number two, James Dolan is a walking bomb. Like, it's just, it's like Dan playing for Daniel Snyder. People have asked decades and decades in, why doesn't it work for the Redskins? Why doesn't it work for the Knicks? Because their egos outweigh their, you know, any sort of sensibilities. And they're two guys who want to be famous, aren't famous for anything but owning sports teams, and lather in that. And almost, it almost seems like they'd rather lose famously than win with respect. So the Knicks haven't been worth a thing since James Dolan has been the owner.
I wish we could go on for an hour, but we have to wrap up because I know you're pressed for time as you make the media gauntlet today. Three ring circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the crazy years of the Laker dynasty. You have been offering incentives, Mr. Perlman, to folks who buy the book. So I'll give you a chance to make a pitch and explain to the listeners exactly what they'll get.
Oh,
aside from the book.
I stole this idea from another author named Molly Knight that I actually like. It's you know, if you buy the book and send me a screenshot either to my Twitter handle, which is at Jeff Perlman, or my email, which is angold22@gmail.com. I send you a signed book plate and I send you a bunch of Laker stickers and just something to put in the book and something to have along with the book. And it makes me feel like a telemarketer, but it's, you know, people are like engaging with writers and with people who, you know, I enjoy engaging with readers. And if people write me and have questions about the book, I'm always happy to answer. So.
And the book is great. And I appreciated the one reference to your hometown of Mayapak.
There are more than you know in that book. There's only one obvious one.
I found one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There are multiple.
and tell me real quick, if you can, this guy who, your buddy as a kid with the whole Kiss fiasco.
Oh, that was my identity. I dedicated the book to Gary. So Gary Miller was my neighbor and best friend growing up. And one day we got in a real fight. We were very young and we were playing the rock band Kiss. And he was being a real jerk about it because he insisted on being Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. And why did I get stuck being Ace Frehley and Peter Criss? So we got in a fight and he chased me and accidentally ran through a window in my house and shattered the window. And I still think it was really crappy of Gary Miller to insist on being both Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. It was just greedy.
This is not the Gary Miller that we know from broadcasting, right? This is a different Gary Miller?
This is a Gary Miller who fishes very well in North Carolina.
Well, you and I have something else in common. I also once upon a time ran through, I would say it was a screen door window.
You shouldn't have insisted on being Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley.
No, I don't even remember why. Somebody was chasing me, though, and I have no idea. Anyway, listen, this was great. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but I'm glad you had time today to stop by talking about Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the crazy years of the Laker dynasty. I'm looking forward to whatever's next from you, sir. What is next, by the way?
My next book I just started working on is a Bo Jackson biography.
Is it Bo Knows ... something?
I can't do that. Got to avoid the cliche best I can. But if you have a title, I'm always looking. I'm always looking.
Okay. All right. Well, you're creative enough to come up with something way better than that.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the time. That is the great author, Jeff Perlman. I'm Mark Renee, and you're On the Mark.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.